Welcome to the Myofascial Magic in Action podcast with me, Joanne, and my very dear friend, Paul.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Good day today.
Fabulous. And we're going to talk about your favourite thing in the whole world, the pelvic foot.
Yes.
Paul Thornley. What made you come up with that?
Well, you know, in our world, in the Pilates world, you're mostly women, right? Vast majority of our clientele are women. And they've all got these pelvic dysfunctions and issues going on in that part of the body. And the traditional way we teach it and try to help them rectify whatever issues are going on there is they lie on the back and we make them strengthen their mythical core. And then they have to do all these Kegel exercises and they have to lock the pelvis in either a neutral or an imprinted position where they literally tilt the pelvis to change the shape of the spine and create an integrity that doesn't really exist when they come up into a vertical world. Anyway, so we had some success with that, like all things work until they don't. And but then I question it because it's just my nature to question everything because I'm a bit argumentative. And I like to know why. I like to know the why thing.
You don't think? I wouldn't call you argumentative. No.
But I question it. I like, if I don't understand something, I want to go and understand it. And I'm not a scientist. I teach movement and I like to understand it. It just didn't feel right. It didn't sit right with my own shape and my own issues in my own body. So.
But you're not a girl, let's be fair.
No, but I am a dude that uses his body a lot and I've got my own shape of my back. I'm expected to utilize the same hewing and the same positions to create an integrity and a foundation.
It's of course, same repertoire, right? So the repertoire.
They don't have a male repertoire and a girl repertoire. They do a thing called Pilates for men, but that just, it's the same repertoire. They just make it harder and make you lift weights. It's just ridiculous. So anyway, yes, there are anatomical differences and there are certain physiological differences. However, if you don't respect the ingredients of a living body and you don't understand the influence that is contained within and you isolate an area to fix the dysfunction within that area, that is dysfunctional at the heart of it. Mm. We're not surgeons just doing our thing. So I thought, well, hang on, there's got to be a bigger picture of this. And this is like over 15 years ago I was questioning this. So, I mean, I've had some better success since because I was chatting to a surgeon. I watched his presentation and I was already doing the foot a lot because in my world, we deal with feet. If your foot moves poorly and you lose the spring in your step and you don't have the capacity to bounce and recoil and decelerate and change direction freely, everything in your body is dysfunctional. Everything is struggling to maintain that homeostatic reaction. It should feel beautiful and it's often not. And there's go on, sorry.
There's one other thing that you've said there, and I know what you're going on to talk about, and I'm really looking forward to our listeners hearing this. But one of the things in that is that when the pelvic floor is being strengthened in inverted commas, and I know there are some fabulous teachers out there doing extremely intelligent work that isn't focused on lying on your back, but I wanted to point out this thing.
Yes.
You know, we're not the only ones, but what we're saying is that this business of pelvic tilt, before we actually talk about the pelvic foot, is so important. And I wanted to ask you about something that I saw recently, which was somebody on YouTube with a model of a pelvis. And it's one of those models where they've got the muscles, so-called, of the pelvic floor are part of the model. Mm-hmm. Putting it on the table as if it stands on a triangle.
Yes.
We all know that. Well, or a diamond, the urogenital diamond. So the back of that diamond is the coccyx, the sides are the sitting bones, and the front is the pubic symphysis or the pubic ramus, band of bones at the front. So basically, for those of you listening, if you took the bony pelvis and held it up at an angle so you were looking straight at it from underneath, you'd see a diamond shape of bony promontories, sticking outy bits, basically, which would be the coccyx representing the back of the body, the sitting bones, which are called the ischial tuberosities, if you're interested, which are obviously at the top of each leg, and then the pubic bone, which is at the front, and it forms a diamond. And when this pelvis was put on the table, of course, it rocks back to rest on the coccyx.
Yes.
And I'm watching this and I'm thinking, you've got to be joking. That is the most suboptimal position for the pelvis in sitting. We call it Schlump Asana in yoga, which is a joke, but it's sadly true.
They've collapsed.
That if you are sat back on your sitting bones, and if you're listening and you're sitting down, you can feel this, and you tuck your tailbone under as if you were an animal with its tail between its legs, you will find yourself slumped back on your coccyx and your sitting bones, technically called the posterior urogenital triangle, but as far as us, it's slumping, literally slumped into your chair, and your pubic bone will feel as if it's coming up towards your breastbone.
Yep.
Right? And your entire pelvic floor is in what we would call a dysfunctional position.
Yeah.
And if all you do listening to this podcast is sit yourself up a little bit and find the anterior triangle, which is the pubic bone and the sitting bones, you'll find out that your tail is happily out behind you and you can wiggle and rotate like a dog wagging its tail.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm looking at this. I don't know what these stars are on my screen. How did that happen?
I don't know. It's fantastic.
I don't understand.
It was your pelvic floor. You just changed it.
It's my pelvic floor. It's just transformed. You'll change your breathing. You'll change your ability to rotate. You change your movements. You learn to sit well, which subject of another podcast, because we do have to sit, but let's sit well. Let's not call it the sitting disease. Let's make it something that trains instead of strains us. Another story for another time. Back to this person on YouTube. I was staggered at what they were talking about based on this suboptimal position of the pelvis, so that you were looking down as if the muscles between the coccyx and the pubis were a floor
that's
underneath
right.
you. And I was like, surely that's their most basic anatomy. Your sacrum is the roof of your pelvis, not the back. It's the roof. It's a sloping roof. It has to be. Otherwise, you are never going to have a spring in your step. You are never going to be able to run for a bus without paying for it in suboptimal impact on your spine.
Yep.
Am I right or right?
Yeah, right, I'm right.
So given that,
mm-hmm.
most of us, when we're lying down, tuck our tailbones under. Sometimes we're taught to put the small of our back in the floor.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Or to tilt or neutralize the spine.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever that means, because I think it's unique to everybody, but another thing.
Yep.
How are we helping our pelvic floor in that position, Paul,
well,
in your world?
I don't think it does. I think because to feel it, you have to feel a squeeze that you would feel. It's like saying, can you close your hand? Yes, I can. But to feel it, I must make a grip.
A fist, yeah.
I have to make a grip. I have to grip it to make a fist. I made a fist just now. There's no pressure at all here. But to feel it, I have to grip it. And for every grip, there has to be a relaxation. And that's the whole nature of the pelvis and the pelvic girdle. It's there to be buoyant and responsive to movement, not to inhibit movement, as if it's defending motion. It's meant to react to it in a wave effect. And this is what's so delicious about it. And for those of you that you have one, so you can feel it yourself and be more familiar with what architecture is there, where how does it feel? We often teach the pelvic girdle Macarena, where you sit on your base and you get yourself organized and you can separate it into these little quadrants. You can have the front half and the back half, the left side and the right side, and then you can quarter it. And you try to feel a sense of contracture in each of those areas.
I'm just playing with wiggling.
It's delicious, right? Yeah. And you feel like a little Macarena, and you've then got to pay attention to this submaximal contraction that is meant to exist there in an anticipatory fashion. But for you to feel it, it can't be submaximal. It has to be much more maxillin in effect to get that response.
Yeah.
And this, again, in itself is dysfunctional, because to feel something means you have to overexert it. And its job is to allow a bouncy, recoiling energy through it so it doesn't take load and have to prevent prolapsing.
Absolutely. And it's like a hammock, really, isn't it? But it's
correct.
A slung hammock in a very specific way.
Mm-hmm.
And it also has to have subtle resonance. And this is one of the keys where I think the way we work with fascia in Myofascial Magic in Action, and we're going on, you know, to the next series, this is the series of books that I'm so excited to have been commissioned to write, is this subtle awareness that, yes, that we work in a spectrum. I say to people, imagine a clock from quarter two to quarter past. Most of our training is from sort of midnight to quarter past, fast, furious, HIIT, the stronger the better. We'll talk about this another time, but you talk about the gladiators. Let's all do what the gladiators can do. And I think yoga and Pilates sometimes go back to sort of 5-2, or we're learning meditation and we're rock still. But in between the quarter two and the 5-2 is 10 whole minutes on this mythological, metaphorical clock.
Yep.
Of subtle ranges within which rebound, recoil, release, restore, and then we can refine,
yep,
come in. And when we talk about refine, we are really talking micro, that is, yeah, instinctive, that is intuitive, that we can rely on our body to do optimal things because we fed it optimal food. Its nutrition is based on optimization. So why this excites me so much is that I know you discovered this in your way within Pilates years before, but when we went to that conference,
yes,
and you were listening, and I hand over to you to what you were going to say before, because it just was so brilliant.
Well, the conference I was at, it a long time ago now, but this, it really just lit a light in my eye. I couldn't ignore it. And it was from a doctor called Niall Galloway. And absolute genius surgeon.
Yeah,
and I don't know him personally as well as you guys do, but I was looking up to listen to his lecture. And what came out of this was, because of his extensive work with women who have prolapsed bladders and other prolapsed rectums and other areas of the pelvic girdle.
Prolapsed uterus is very common. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. He would have to go in, he would have to restore the integrity of the pelvic girdle surgically. And what he said his best approach to this is he would ask them to remove their socks and shoes and to show their ankle and their foot. And my ears just pricked up because I was like, this is genius, because that's the first thing we teach and the first thing I'd ever been taught from martial arts into military, into Pilates. Look after the feet and the body will look after itself. And sure enough, he would assess their foot and their ankle and how it looked and how the architecture of the foot currently was on the floor seated and then standing as it became weight-bearing. It was a direct mirror and a direct reflection of what happened in that particular ipsilateral pelvis. So before he ever took the knife to them, he already knew what to expect. And that would influence his choice of how to go about his particular surgery on that particular female.
Yeah.
And that, I thought it was genius. So he says to me, I called him after and I challenged him on this so I could have a bit more understanding of what he meant. He said, Paul, all you do, if you can address ankles and feet for these women, you directly influence the quality of their pelvis. He says, whether you do it pre-requirement or you do it post-surgical, really focus on the foot and the ankle and you do them a world of favors. And ever since, I thought, okay, let me explore that wide. So then I go into the dissection lab and I decide to explore this. Where is the relationship of the foot and the pelvis? And when you see it and you understand how the pelvis grows the foot at the sacrum, the big toe grows there and it grows like a branch from a bark of a tree and it grows into this limb bud and it grows out and creates the lower leg and then it grows the thigh and it's integral for how the pelvis responds, for how the foot is formed and is developed over our lifetime. So it only makes sense then, not that people who focus on the pelvis and the pelvic girdle in isolation are not doing magnificent work. They are. However, there's this huge piece that has a much more direct and long-term influence. How are you moving your foot to influence the pelvis directly? And it's just like a trampoline. If I don't bind the central trampoline, the central fabric and architecture to the outsides, to the pelvis and to the femur, I don't get a roughly rhythmic tensioning and these rotational patterns that should occur there, and I walk poorly and I lose my rebound, my victim will be the pelvis. It will become victim and it will become dysfunctional and it will plague them. And it becomes the most inconvenient thing. And what is really upsetting is that in my early days, when I first started this, most of my clientele who experienced pelvic dysfunction, incontinence, amongst other things, were in their 50s plus. Now, a lot of my clients are 25. up to 35 to 40. They're having trouble with sex lives. They're having trouble going to work. They've got incontinence because there's so much of a focus on having a strong core, pelvic tilting. They don't walk. They want to have great glutes, great quads, and everything is focused on attaining this aesthetic,
tightening,
static, tightening, stiffening, beautiful figurine of a look that doesn't move well. And that for me is a it's curse. Tragedy. It's a curse on the fitness and healthcare system. We've made these beautiful bodies into machines that emulate the machines in the environment they're training within, rather than making them this lovely organic architectural flow where you make contact with the flow and that force is translated through your body efficiently, and then your tissues have the time and the gracefulness to develop properly.
Just gorgeously said. And this is the other part as well. When that, what you said about the way the pelvic floor is suspended.
Yeah.
There's the most beautiful architecture within the design of the pelvic floor. Yes. When it's healthy, obviously when it's born well and in good shape, as it were, that naturally resonates with every walking step.
Yes.
Right? It's it's widthways and lengthways. Mm-hmm. It's resonance. The trampoline effect is absolutely beautiful in a natural gait.
Yes.
And this is what I think people don't necessarily realize, that sitting all the time means that that isn't animated.
No.
And walking badly, which is why we've got quite an emphasis on walking in MMIA, haven't we? But not walking like we think, not none of this heel strike and all this business. Not that we don't heel strike, but that we have a choice about how we walk. But it's what happens in the pelvis first that makes such a difference.
Correct.
And then all of that work is done for you if the movement's appropriate, right? You don't have to do anything. The pelvic floor becomes a default healthy system, fabric, soft tissue architecture.
Yeah. If your body is organized well, we call it positioning, then the movement that should happen is graceful and effortless. It just is a seamless transition from ground to ceiling and moving in any direction you want at any tempo you want. It's when the positioning becomes faulty and then becomes hardwired, and that becomes your norm. So something that is very unnormal becomes very commonplace. And it's commonplace to have incontinence. That's not normal to lose control of your bladder, but it's accepted. It's commonplace to have pain in your back. No, it's not. It's not normal to have it, but people get it very often just because they force movement and they tolerate it until the body says, enough is enough. I'm not letting you do it anymore. I cannot adapt under these circumstances for any longer. And unfortunately, because of they've ignored fascia and the quality of it, and they don't really understand the characteristics of it and the benefit of understanding them and incorporating them in their muscular training, then what happens is the body defends itself because the pain is not in the brain. That's not true. Pain can be in the gut. It can be in your wrist. It can be in your groin, because we are a walking brain. Again, we try to do neuroscience and we separate the brain into its various elements and sections and the departments that are hierarchically important. But unfortunately, your groin doesn't recognize that. Your movement pattern doesn't recognize that. Your brain doesn't organize anything. It just remembers how you did it and hardwires that, because your neurology is in your skin. There's 250 million sensory receptors in fascia. They're not there just to feed the brain. They react instinctively, immediately. And then they'll let the brain know the brain is a library. And it better be organized well.
I think it's more than that. I think Martin Grunwald did this beautiful piece on haptic perception.
Yes.
As to the number of sensory organs in a square millimeter of tissue.
Right.
And Robert Schleip and Carla Stecco pointed out that anything in the human body is cubed.
Yes.
Because it's at least three-dimensional. And I inserted at least there because I think it's multi-dimensional.
Yes.
But it's another discussion. And so that's, hang on a minute, that's 250,000 cubed, so that's times 250,000 per square millimeter.
Yeah.
Cubed millimeter, sorry. So the volume, I think we're understanding, and in fairness, let's also remember Dean Juhan, who wrote in Job's Body many, many decades ago.
Yes.
That in the raising the question that the triple helix of triple helices, that is every strand of fascia.
Yeah.
any of you do yoga out there, we liken that to the threads of the nadis, but that's an energetic symbolism of what we actually think is true in the fascia physically, mm-hmm. is that the within them, the fluid within it is cerebrospinal fluid.
Wow. How
and about that? It is the body's brain. The fluid of the body is running the brain awareness throughout.
Yes.
And one of the myths that sends me nutty, is when you study the most basic embryology. I mean, mm-hmm. at the most basic level, the first thing you learn is one of the first things is how the first embryonic beginnings, mm-hmm. the formation of the gut tube,
yes,
what's called the true endoderm, mm-hmm. is formed by ectodermal cells. And technically, I say this is the science of embryology, is that the ectoderm is the skin and the brain, mm-hmm. and the endoderm is the gut. But hang on a minute, the endoderm, the true endoderm, was formed by ectodermal cells, which means the skin and the brain formed the lining of the gut.
Yeah.
So why would we be surprised that we've got a gut brain or a gut awareness or a gut intelligence that we
have
call
good
our
instinct? Exactly.
Hello. Why are we surprised? Why we're discovering this because we've been brought up under a spell for 400 years of contiguity.
Yeah.
When actually we've never been anything other than continuity.
Yes.
Managed, organized, self-organized. And we're beginning not only to understand that, but I think apply a different mindset to it.
Yeah.
Which is enabling us to understand a completely different way of seeing and then using things like the work we do in MMIA. I'm not saying it's exclusive for a minute, but what you've done is taken this underlying premise of self-organization and medical exercise and all the work we've done in the labs and so on and so forth and put it together in these exquisite sequences. I mean, they're exquisite, Paul. They really are. And when you say it's movement master chefery, well, I say it's movement master chefery because I think you're a master chef at it and I've seen you work.
Well, that's the thing, right? You want people to enjoy moving and not be fearful of the consequences of moving.
Yeah.
That they can just do it, right? And so you get this with, I mean, if it's not a woman with a pelvic issue, it's a guy with hemorrhoids. Like there's all sorts of things going on in all of our pelvises because of a reaction to inappropriate internal forces that we invite. And if you can teach people how to uninvite these horrible guests and invite a different deliciousness to movement. Show them the door, get rid of them as quickly as you can and as well as you can and don't invite them back. Like the body can't have intra-abdominal pressure. You would explode. Like that pressure has to get out of you like a pressure cooker. It has to alleviate somewhere. Mm. And if you're holding that pressure in to create integrity and bracing, then I promise you it's looking for a way out of you. And if you do it repetitively enough, then you're going to cause all sorts of dysfunctional outcomes, particularly in the pelvis. So knowing how to take a body vertical and get them off their floor, and we use the floor in a much more positive way, but you get them off the floor and up vertical and then organize their legs in such a way that it enhances and respects the architectural nature of the femurs that go into the pelvis and grew from them. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, the pelvis goes, oh, thanks very much. Here's the reinforcements. I'm meant to be in this position. Oh my God, you want me to do what? No problem whatsoever. And all of a sudden, you start to see the curiosity and smile and recognition on people's faces as they realize, oh, this feels totally different. And once you make that familiar, then all of a sudden their walking style changes. They're bounding around the room.
Their breathing changes.
Well, exactly. If something is dysfunctional, everything is dysfunctional. Everything is managing dysfunction and inhibition. And we want to remove these and make sure we reintroduce your body to improve the relationships that should be there and harness them. So that they last longer, for as long as they want them to, until your body says, I'm done and I'm going to sit down forever.
Well, you know, I'm on a mission to turn everybody into fascia whisperers.
Yes.
And I think that should be the title of the last book, actually. Anyway, it's got a different title at the moment. That's another discussion. And thank you. That was just absolutely brilliant. I hope it's got everybody thinking. And get your pelvic floor work standing up and look after your feet and ankles.
Yeah, look after your pelvic foot. There's only one floor. It's on the ground. Play with it.
Thanks, Paul.
My pleasure.
Can't wait to see you next week.
See you soon.
Bye.